The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 44. Barcelona is one of the most dangerous cities in the world to drive, with an accident occurring every 90 seconds. Keep those hands at 10 and 2, folks.
1, 2, 3. I'll show you Paris in the morning. I'll show you London afternoon. If you feel your Dublin.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. Today we're talking entrepreneurship, building your own business, location independence, and how it's possible to do all that while still traveling full-time and living out of a suitcase. Natalie Sisson is one of the world's leading authorities on how to create a business that can be run from anywhere, which is why we're so happy to feature her in our Paradise Pack last week and why I'm super excited to have her on today's show. She talks about her journey from being a corporate ladder climber to, in her words, a homeless bum, to now being a successful location independent entrepreneur with 8 different revenue streams. She'll also tell us about some of her craziest travel adventures, like a 2-month bike trip through Africa, getting on a plane without knowing where she was going, and why she told a security guard she had a bomb strapped to her chest. This interview is full of incredible insights and advice, so let's get right to it. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a woman who has snuck into Burma illegally, won a gold medal in Beach Ultimate Frisbee, biked between Nairobi and Cape Town, and has lived as a location-independent traveler for the last 9 years. Natalie Sisson of thesuitcaseentrepreneur.com. Natalie, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Natalie, you've got one of the coolest website names out there, so can we start by just telling people what it means to be a suitcase entrepreneur?
Great question. I think for me, it means the ultimate in freedom. So yes, I've lived in a suitcase for at least the last 4 years full time, but ultimately it means being able to pack up your life and your business and be completely mobile and flexible and choose where you want to go, who you want to spend time with, and what you want to be doing.
Yeah, and we've mentioned that you said the last 4 years you've been living out of your suitcase. Can you kind of tell people your backstory, how you got to where you are and how you're able to be location independent full time now for the last 4 years? You can travel where you want and run your business from there, because it wasn't always the case.
No, it wasn't. And you know what? I just was home at Christmas, and that home is New Zealand for me. Not that I live there anymore, but I found a photo of myself in a suitcase, like when I was a kid, literally in the suitcase with my head poking out. And I was like, man, if only I'd like dug up these diaries and these degrees and things that I got in tourism and business way back then, I may have got to my business a lot sooner. Because if I think back, everything's been an intersection of what I love doing. Traveling since the age of 2, my parents are from Europe, writing, blogging, etc., and just really having a keen understanding for business. But instead, I went into the corporate world. I was in the corporate world for about 8 years, working my way up through various marketing jobs, branding, and right through until business development across a range of industries, actually, in New Zealand and also in England. And I'm not actually denying that those years weren't great, because you earned money. I did that whole let's climb the corporate ladder. I got to be managed. I got to manage teams. And ultimately, I found out at the very end that it just wasn't for me. Like, it absolutely, the final job that I was in London, and commuting and that whole 9-to-5 mentality and whole bureaucracy and office politics was the thing that finally drove me over the edge to actually start my business. So in many ways, I'm thankful for the years in the corporate world.
And when you did decide to start your own business, how did that come about?
It came about over a giant glass of wine and a big chunk of cheese at a networking event. So I was in Vancouver, Canada. I'd gone there to play World Championship Ultimate Frisbee, which is a sport. Then I just went to as many networking events as I could while I was in Vancouver. And I knew that I wanted to start a business. I had an idea around actually consulting back to corporates on health, etc. But instead, I met my business partner at a networking event, and he had an idea for a business. It was a Facebook application with a payments focus. And it focused on kind of like sports teams and collecting fees. And I was like, I'm in. Actually, I said, I'm a homeless, unemployed bum, and I'm really good at marketing. And he said, great, sounds like a perfect combination. So we set about building a business for about 18 months. And it was really my first foray into entrepreneurship, like, you know, figuring out the finances. What's the business model? Is it freemium? Is it premium? How do we build this app on Facebook? How do we hire a team with zero budget? How do I use social media to build an audience and basically get customers? And it was a fantastic, like, whirlwind ride. And during that time, I started my blog, which today is my entire business. So it wasn't exactly a straight path, but it was built up of a lot of experiences for sure.
And when you decided to leave your home, did you ever have intentions in making travel a full-time thing? Or did you kind of think, all right, I'm going to break away now, but I'll probably return and settle down at some point and I'll get back into this lifestyle? Was it always like, nope, I know I'm going for it and I know I'm not coming back?
Actually, no, I didn't think that I'd be away this long or that I'd just turn this into my life. So I'm pretty excited about that. I did think that I'd leave New Zealand for a couple of years, hang out in Europe and then travel and continue to do that. But no, I had no idea that this would turn into a lifestyle that I loved. And I haven't technically answered your other question, which people are probably like, well, that's great. How does she make money? Do you want me to explain kind of what my business actually is?
Of course, of course. I've got that question queued up, so just go right into it.
It's interesting, actually. I've got about 8 revenue streams now, and I started off with just a couple, but apparently billionaires have 7 revenue streams. So I don't know what that says for me, whether I'm a little unfocused or I'm just going to be like mega rich, which would be ironic because I don't really spend much money. I spend it on experiences, not stuff. It's changed over the years, but it's a combination of I do coaching all online, right? All from my mobile and my smartphone. I do group coaching. I have a membership club for high flyers, so established entrepreneurs who want to do more masterminding and mentoring. I have digital products and programs for sale. Like you, I also recommend products and programs and get commissions as an affiliate. I get paid to speak these days. I have my best-selling book, and I also run workshops and retreats. So it's pretty awesome because it's quite diverse, but they're all focused on helping people create freedom in business and adventure in life. And it's a good mix of some residual income and then some very active income, some offline stuff and mainly online. So it's pretty cool combination.
Yeah. And I think diversification, many people tell you in the entrepreneurial space or even just in the business space, that diversification is key because you never know when something is either going to go big or drop drastically. And people who know my story know that, you know, I lost $6,000 a month on my birthday last year and, you know, had to scramble to diversify. And how have you been able to figure out what your next step is going to be? Has it been a natural progression or have you just said, you know, I'm going to try this and give it a go? And how did you come to these 8 streams of income?
I think it's been a good combination of both. So obviously the quickest path to revenue is through services, right? Like offering up copywriting or website design or coaching of some kind. And I didn't actually start with it. I started with an offline workshop in Vancouver. And the minute I'd run it 3 times as a sellout and I'd actually made a ton of money from it, I decided, okay, I wonder if I can take this on the road. And I turned that workshop into an online program. So I was definitely trying to go for more products and programs that could be run from a laptop and that I could do them from anywhere in the world. And I really tested that in the first, like literally after that workshop, I just went off to Buenos Aires, Argentina to see if I could launch my first program. And then from there, I created a digital book, which went really well. And then I turned that into kind of a mini membership site. And then I was like, you know what? I still really love being able to meet people in person. So from time to time, I would run workshops based on what I was doing. And so I wouldn't say there was a really clear path until probably the year 2 when I started going, well, hang on a minute, what the heck is my sales funnel and what's my whole business model? And I nutted out and really looked back over what had been working for me, what I actually really enjoyed doing, and what was probably most useful for the lifestyle that I was building. Because I'm a big advocate for obviously doing stuff that lights you up and you enjoy. And if you don't like all this passive stuff, like setting up affiliate sites and all this linking and tracking, then maybe that's not the right business model for you. And a lot of my work has become more active. I actually really love to meet people in person. So that's why I've been running retreats and I've been running workshops in the major cities that I've been traveling to. And that doesn't actually, if you think about it, tie in really well with being location independent. But in some ways it does now, because wherever I'm traveling to, I'll say, hey, is there an opportunity to meet some of my community, reach some more people, make an impact and potentially get more clients? So I think coming back to your question, it's developed naturally. It's developed as I've gained more confidence in areas and also figured out what I really enjoy doing and combine that in with my travels and adventures.
And has there been a point that you've tried something that hasn't worked out? Because I think a lot of people will hear your story or hear other entrepreneurial story and they think, well, they're so successful at all seven revenue streams they've done, but they don't hear, well, I tried XYZ and they're not a revenue stream because I failed at it. Is there anything that you did that you would say, I failed at it or it didn't work, but here's the lessons I took away from it?
Oh, I fail all the time. I'd like to think that it's actually a good thing to fail, because it's a good thing if you fail and then you tweak and you optimize and you give it another shot. So, you know, even this year, it's been a complete experimentation with running my BYOB, Build Your Online Business workshops around the world. And for example, in Australia, it was a massive sellout. And in New Zealand, it went really well. And then I was running one in London and only two people kind of signed up. And I was like, oh, that's crap, because London's huge. I didn't do a particularly brilliant job of marketing it. I tend to get my community to just kind of, you know, step up. And if they want to come, they come. But it's just interesting, like even at that stage, the people who came were surprised that there weren't more people. And so it's always a number of factors, right? Like busy people in busy cities, not necessarily enough of people in my community were there, other cities where they're really excited about the online world and wanting to jump into learning how to run a business from anywhere. So I just look at all these things as opportunities for development and learning. I've had a number of product launches where I thought it was going to go amazingly well and it sucked. In fact, the very first program that I ran, I decided to do a webinar, never held a webinar in my life. Had 30 people sign up, which was nuts. It was like pathetic. 15 people turned up live. I lost my voice on the day and I made one sale. And I was like, you know what? On the scheme of things, that's not brilliant. But in reflection, I just sold a product that I, you know, hadn't technically created and I was really excited about. So I think we get pretty hard on ourselves sometimes with what's realistic and who we compare ourselves to. And we forget to look back on where we've come from and how much we've learned from there. So yeah, I would like to say that I push and try things all the time and I throw stuff at walls that I think is going to stick. And most of the time it does, but for sure there's times when it slides down and just doesn't work out.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point, not only embracing failure, because if you haven't failed, you probably haven't succeeded to the level that you should be succeeding at. And the other part that you kind of mentioned is shifting your mindset around failure. Like you said, one sale, you probably went in thinking this is going to be great. And maybe you had a number in your head of how many sales you were going to make. And hopefully it was more than one. But in the end, right, you made a sale and you don't even know how those other 15 people were affected. Maybe they came in later. Maybe they bought something later. And so I think after the process, looking back and saying, well, what did I gain from this monetarily? Or just from experience. And obviously any webinar you run from now, you've had that experience of, well, only one sale was made and they've probably only gone up from there. So I think that's an important thing that people have to realize.
Yeah, definitely. And also I have massively high expectations for everything that I do. And I have high expectations for everybody else, like in the best possible way. But that just means that often I'm disappointed or I'm pushing really hard for stuff. And then when I reflect on it, I'm like, actually, that was a really great result. And I have gone on to do some incredible things, which I'm really proud of. And because that's because I've learned to put in that process of patting yourself on the back at each milestone in business and in life. And also attempting not to, even though it's really easy to do, compare myself to other people who aren't even at my level, like they're way above or they're somewhere else. That's just a really stupid thing to do. And I've luckily stopped doing that, because that's the stuff that makes you feel like you've achieved less when you've actually achieved really well.
Yeah, I think that is one of the hardest lessons I've had to learn. And yeah. I think for people starting out, they sit there and they think, I want to be as big as that person. You know, most people have someone in mind or a few people in mind. And what I've had to do for myself is kind of go on an information diet and stop kind of reading the people that I want to emulate, but that are bigger than me, and just say, all right, how can I be the best me that I can be? I'm not going to be at their level because they started 5, 6, 7 years ago, or because they're doing this differently. And you can really crush all your hope and spirit and motivation very quickly by comparing yourself to others.
Exactly.
Now, during this entrepreneurial journey that you're still on, what have been some of the big tipping points for you, the big wins or the things where you've had these aha moments and thought, all right, now I'm going to do this, and just really kind of change your mindset towards your actual entrepreneurial journey?
That's a really good question. I feel like there have been a few. Probably the first one was in the first year of business and actually realizing that I'd got to a year in business, fully supporting myself that entire year, and that I'd traveled to all these countries during that time and somehow managed to pull it all off. So that was one moment where I was like, huh, I think maybe I can actually call myself an entrepreneur and maybe I'm onto something. Another milestone, I think, would be when I had finally made the right amount of money or enough money that I felt I could really invest into a new website design and start putting more into my products and programs in terms of the professionalism of how they looked. The third point was probably when I started hiring team members. That was just before I went on that big 6,500 kilometer or 4,000 mile bike ride down Africa. I was like, yep, I need some team members if this business is going to run. So that was an exciting point because I was like, oh, I've got like a VA. And I think the big tipping point for me was last year when I actually self-published my own book. Not only did I get it funded through Kickstarter and I had a huge amount of support, but it became a bestseller on Amazon and I couldn't have hoped and dreamed for anything more. So that was huge. And it's also had massive implications since. Like they always say writing a book is like the best business card you can have, but it's led to paid speaking gigs and a world of opportunities and incredible people coming into my life and a ton more people coming into my community and just all these things that you can't even put your finger on at the time. I think the big one this year is I've been running these mastermind retreats. I just held one here in Barcelona and I'm holding one in New Zealand at the end of the year. Like these are big ticket items that they're a lot of work for me, but they're also something I've always dreamed of doing. And, you know, they're meant to be for more established entrepreneurs who want to invest in themselves and to have people kind of invest in me and believe in me and come along to these things and fly halfway around the world to be part of it has really helped mindset again. In terms of, huh, if you keep shifting your game and you keep up-leveling yourself, you bring people up with you, they buy into that vision, and then you can just do even more. So I'd say those would be the key ones that I can think of.
Yeah, I think that's really cool because it follows a natural progression of an entrepreneur from, okay, I've got to the point where I've made it, like I've done it for a year or a set amount of time and I'm not, you know, starving or destitute or anything. Then you get to investing in yourself a little bit. And I was at that point, you know, a year ago or half a year ago where I'm like, all right, I have to start reinvesting in this. I've gone as far as I can go without really putting anything in other than my time and hard work and just a nominal amount of money. And then you build to the team level where you're saying, I've taken it as big as I can take it. I need others to help me. And that's where I'm at now. And I think a lot of people get stuck at. What are some of the tips that you'd have for people who are saying, all right, I've done a good job getting to where I want to be at on my own, but I want to get it bigger and I need the expertise of others, or I just need people to take some of these small tasks off my plate. How have you been able to find good people to help you out? Because that's kind of the golden goose there, right? Getting a team member that actually you can rely on and you know can do a good job.
Yeah, I think that's like, you've got two parts in that question. So I'll answer the first part, which is if you want to keep up leveling and you've got to this point where you're quite successful, but you know there's more, that's the time when you start investing in coaches, putting yourself in a mastermind or creating a mastermind, finding some really great mentors and surrounding yourself with more entrepreneurs who are doing the right stuff. And that's critical. And that's something that I could have done a lot sooner. And that's partly why I built the High Flyer Club, is to provide that for other people. So that's one thing for those of you who are listening, who you're like, yeah, maybe I'm doing all the right things, but I'm not reaching that next stage of personal and professional growth, do that, invest in yourself. And the second part to your question is around, yeah, outsourcing. When's a good time? When's the team? I mean, I honestly wish that I'd started sooner. It's so much more affordable than people think. I personally love and adore Odesk. So it's one of the biggest online communities now, but I've also hired most of my team through it, especially from the virtual assistant side, admin, projects, contracts. I think you can set your budget. You can look at the level of English that you want from people. You can look at their past skills. You can see how many ratings and reviews they've got. You can get examples of their work. And when I first started, I just hired two research assistants, and it's not a huge job. And I hired them to do the same job and then kind of compared. And I've done that ever since, really. I've got two virtual assistants at the moment, and I'm just working on which ones are good and which areas. And then for bigger jobs, you know, where you're really looking for an amazing copywriter or a website designer or a strategist or a sales funnel expert or an SEO person, that's when I really reach out to my network and I look at who's been referred to me or who's just done a job for somebody else that I admire and has done a really, you know, excellent job. How can I get in touch with them? So when you first start out, budgeting is fine, but I've definitely learned over the years you pay for what you get. So a great example, no, actually maybe not a great example, but I did just hire somebody through Odesk for some website coding to mobile optimize my site. And I'm probably not going to do that again, because even though I picked somebody in the US and I paid a fair price, it just got completely botched and was a a shocker. So it's just made me kind of consider, if you're really wanting great people for the right job and the job is more important and pretty critical to your business, then get referrals and be prepared to invest more.
Yeah, and the common theme in those two answers that you gave, the starting a mastermind and finding a mentor, as well as when you need bigger stuff done, getting referrals, it really comes down to connecting with people. And I think you've done a very, very good job of that. And I preach it to my community. I think you're here. All entrepreneurs kind of echo the idea that it's impossible to go at it as an entrepreneur alone and be successful. And you need a support group who will understand you, can help you, can guide you, or at least a mentor. What have you done to become so interconnected with people? And how can others who are on this path, who, like you said, are at the point where they're like, all right, I've done a good job, but I really need others who have gone before me to really help me out and keep me motivated. How can they connect with people in a genuine way?
They can live out of a suitcase and knock on people's doors a lot more. I mean, honestly, I think there's a couple of reasons, and thank you for saying that, that I've probably got a great network now as well. I'm in my fourth year of business. I reached out to people at the beginning, and I think it took me too long to ask people for help or to seek mentors, as I said. But once I did, I think it's really lovely. People just want to help you, and then you get to help them in return. So it becomes a kind of beautiful circle. I've been very fortunate to meet people at great conferences and events and networking. And I think I've been pretty strategic about which events that I've gone to and spent my energy on, and also which people I've approached and talked to and built relationships with through social media and then in person. Another thing, I think the traveling's helped a huge amount, because I literally do call into so many countries that I tend to get to drop in on people, and people make the effort because they know that I'm coming through for a small period of time. Whereas when you're living in a place for a while, I find that people don't do that as much. You know, like if you're in New York, it's harder to catch up with people all the time because everybody's busy. When you're traveling and you say you're coming through for a period, I tend to be quite good at bringing people together for that period. So other people that might mutually benefit each other and meeting up. And I think that's just been a theme of my life, really. I love bringing people together to create amazing experiences.
Any conferences that you would personally recommend then that you've been to and thought, this is worth the money to go for entrepreneurs?
Oh, yeah. Well, it totally depends on what you want to do, right? So, I mean, World Domination Summit has been pretty instrumental for me, mainly because it's my entire community that are there, all the right kind of people that I want to be in front of. They're digital nomads. They're people seeking more freedom. They're there to say, hey, why are we doing stuff this way? Why can't we do it differently? Breaking out of convention, all that stuff, right? So you're going to find the right kind of people there. I kind of, it's really odd. Like, I went to Blog World several years ago, and I still have really good friends from that one meeting. So every so often, those more ridiculously large conferences with the right people in the space that you're in are going to be really beneficial, so long as you go in there with a game plan of who do I really want to meet and who would I like to get closer to and who would I like to develop a friendship with. Outside of that, I've been to a couple of events where I've actually spoken at, and they've been ridiculously valuable for the connections that we've had there as well. I've not yet been to South by Southwest. I would love to, but you know, I try to go to conferences all around the world. So ProBlogger would be one that I would attempt to try and go to. There's a couple in Europe that are not South by Southwest kind of related, but similar, that are in the technology field. So it's really hard to say, because people who are listening might have totally different fields. But generally, you want to go where your audience are, or your community are, or the people who are influential in your mind that you just love to get in front of. And sometimes you pay a price for that, but it always returns dividends. And other times it's just about the bonds and friendships that you make.
Yeah, and I think it's important when you do go to those conferences, even maybe more important than picking the right one, because you might not know what the right one is before you go, is going there with an open mind and saying like, all right, I want to meet these people. But also for me, it was being cognizant of the people around me, like people I didn't know. One of the guys I just launched a Paradise Pack with, Jason, you know, we did not know each other before World Domination Summit last year. We just happened to sit next to each other. We were both from Philadelphia. And from there, you know, we became business partners in this project. So I think also being open and just putting yourself out there and not being afraid to talk to the people next to you because you don't know them, you're going to meet so many amazing people that, like you said, bringing people together and being willing to connect with people is kind of the first step.
Exactly.
Now, one of the hardest things for me to figure out as a traveling entrepreneur, something I struggle with day to day, is how to balance life and work. And it doesn't even have to be when you're traveling, but that's makes it even harder, I think, because we naturally, when we're traveling, want to get out and see all the things that we're around and the new places we're at. Have you been able to strike a balance? And what have you kind of done to be able to find that balance between life, work, play, and travel?
It's taken a while, I'm not going to lie. I think I did a pretty good job of it because ultimately I realized that to get the maximum amount of freedom, I needed to be really disciplined. And I've become disciplined around my kind of routine. I don't actually have a routine every day, but I have a semblance of it about what's important to me and what I prioritize, and also about how I like to spend my time. And so that has just helped me to have a better, and I will never say work-life balance, but that's allowed me to build a business I love and live a lifestyle that I adore. I call it my six-step daily success plan, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but it is very much driven back to my painted picture, and I have a very, very clear vision for my life and business of how I want it to be 3 years from now, but written in the present tense. So I'm more than happy to share a link to my current one, which has had like 33,000 plus views, but it's a really clear laid out picture of the kind of relationships I want, the friendships I want, the team I want, the business I want, the customers I'm serving, the people I'm impacting, how I'm living my life. And so I guess with that clarity, I just make sure that I'm working towards that every single day. And I have a good mix of working hard in the morning, then going out and exploring like Barcelona, for example, where I am, playing some beach ultimate, going for a swim, being in the sun, coming back, doing some work, going out again. So it's just really, it's just being really clear on how you want to live your life and then making it happen.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll link that up in the show notes, guys. So if you want to see the slideshow that she's put together, it's really cool. I urge you to go check that out. And I think the main idea of keeping the big picture in focus, I think one of the things I do, you know, day-to-day stuff can consume you, like answering email or all these little small things that are kind of easy wins. And then the day goes by and you're like, all right, but I didn't work towards this at all or the big picture at all. And I think that's one of the hardest things for an entrepreneur is saying, how do I keep the big picture in focus and what are the main priorities to get there? And then all the other little things can kind of fill in around that, but that's what you have to keep shooting for. And really hard balance there, but it seems like you've been able to strike a good balance with that, Natalie. So congrats on that. I think it's an ongoing process.
It is, definitely. And you know, it may change for me. Like next year, I want to spend more time in fewer places. So right now I might be 2 days summer and then a week summer and then 3 weeks. And the longest I've actually had anywhere has been about 2 months, and that was last year. And then there's a part of me that's like, ooh, that's kind of tiring after a while. So next year is all about 3 months, 3 months, 3 months in special places and really picking those places that I want to be, chasing the sun, being surrounded with good friends and making more time of being part of that community.
Yeah, really interesting, because the next question for you is going to be, what does your travel schedule look like? Because I just went on a 2 month trip through Europe, and you know, it was the whole, all right, I'm going to work from the road type thing. We bounced around so quickly during parts of it that it was very, very, very hard to get work done and to have that balance. But I found out, and I knew this going into it, but I found out when we bunked down in Croatia for 3 weeks that it was much easier because you have an apartment. You don't have to go out every day and see something new. You know, you're not feeling pulled to go out. I think that three month kind of thing, or even 2 months, that to me is the ultimate goal at this point too. So it seems like we kind of have similar travel paths in mind there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's not happening for me this year so much. I've just had a crazy year. It's been great, but I've been all over the place, and I'm about to head to the US after being in Europe, and I'll be bouncing around when I'm in there, and then I'll be heading to Southeast Asia. But I am at some point planning on having maybe a month up to two in one part of Southeast Asia. But yeah, I think it's great just to figure out what your level of location independence is and your level of comfort. I know a lot of people who are like, I could never live in my suitcase. I like my creature comforts. I like my routine. I like my stuff. And I'm like, awesome. That is so good for you. And sometimes I go to people's places or I stay with friends and I'm like, ah, I really like that you have, you know, these things in place, and maybe I'd like to hang up my stuff for once. But then I also love the freedom of just being able to pack up in a suitcase and go and not be one of those people who's like, we must clean out the garage. We've got so much stuff. We've got to look after the dog. We've got the car payments, the mortgage payments, all this stuff. So it's totally up to you, obviously. And there's no one right way, but I pretty much adore how I get to live.
On the travel side of things, you've done a lot of crazy stuff. Some of the stuff I mentioned in the intro, what are some of your greatest travel memories?
Do you know what? They start to merge into one, which I think sometimes is a little sad. For people who are listening who haven't traveled much, it sounds terrible. But if you ask me exactly where I went in Japan recently, I would be able to tell you. But even trips last year, I can't even remember half the names of the places, but I have clear, vivid memories of what I did when I was there, which is probably a bad sign when you're jumping around 15 countries in a year or more. Definitely you touched on one with Africa. I mean, I'd never been to the continent before, and still I've been through 8 countries in the continent, which is not much considering how big it is. But doing that by bicycle for 2 months and pretty much being offline the entire time was an incredible experience. One of the most challenging. My ass was sore every day. It pushed me to new limits of what I didn't think that I had. Like I think I'm pretty tough minded. I've played a lot of sports, but there were days when I was just not able to push through. And it's amazing what the body will and the mind will come up with. So I thought that was really impressive. Getting to see elephants while we were cycling was nuts. Bungee jumping while there, bridge swinging, just some really cool things. And I just think every single time you're traveling to a new place, country, it's the culture that really strikes me. It's the people. It's the difference in languages and the reactions that they have and their body language and their just everything is really fascinating to me. It's one continual journey.
Yeah, it's all the things that you don't know you're going to see, right? Like you said, you don't really know what the people are going to be like because you've never interacted with them. You're not sure of the culture. It's not, you know, all the pictures that you see of places, but it's the on-the-ground experiences you have that really make a dent in your memory and stick with you, I think.
Exactly.
And on this show, we're all about helping people travel more while spending less, and that's the tagline of it and all. What are some of the best ways you found to save money when traveling? Because you mentioned you do it, you know, fairly budget-conscious type traveling, and you're always traveling, so you must have some pretty good tips for that.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to be a lot more budget-conscious, but as my business has done, you know, really well, I tend to like, I don't splurge, but I tend to like upgrading from time to time and doing cool stuff. So I book into hotels, but I will try and use points where possible, or I'll use something like Agoda or booking.com and just see what deals they have. I love Airbnb. It's so awesome when you need to like get an apartment somewhere for quite a while and much more reasonable. I'll stay with friends where they actually invite me and they have, you know, an actual room for me in the house. I don't do couch surfing at all. But I also love to be able to return the favor. So when I was in Buenos Aires or when I was in San Diego or whenever I've had a house or rented a place, I always invite people to come and return the favor. That really helps, obviously, being able to stay with friends and return the favor in some way for them. And renting apartments through things like Craigslist. And another thing that I've started doing is house sitting. Like I would love to do more house and preferably dog and cat sitting because I've owned properties before. I adore animals and I miss them and they don't fit in my suitcase. So that's something that I'm really focusing on for next year is doing more house sitting. And there's some incredible opportunities around the world. Like I was really keen to jump on one in Guatemala just recently, which was going to be for 2 months near the end of this year, over this incredible volcanic lake view, looking after 2 cats right by a yoga center with great Wi-Fi in this amazing house. And I was like, sounds like a great deal. So those are a couple of ways I guess I will save money is, you know, booking things in advance, staying with great friends, Airbnb, and then more house sitting opportunities.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. If anyone is interested in house sitting, we did have Andy Peck on, who's from Trusted House Sitters, and he gave us promo code and stuff like that. So we'll link that up. So if you guys are interested in house sitting, Natalie's a proponent of it. I'm a huge proponent of it. We've had a lot of guests on who have talked about it. It's definitely a growing trend. I don't know if trend's the right word, but a growing way for people who want to travel in some bit of style. Like you mentioned, there are amazing places out there, way better than places I could afford on my own. And, you know, most of the time you get to get them for free. Maybe you watch pets and stuff like that, but it really is good experiences. So if you guys are interested, I'll link that in the show notes. Make sure you check out Trusted House Sitters, get the promo, all that kind of stuff. If you haven't done it, it's going to blow you away, right, Natalie? Like the opportunities out there. It's not these little shacks in the middle of the wood. It's some amazing places.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. And people trusting you with their house, obviously, for periods of time, like months even. There's French villas in the countryside and ocean cabanas in the Caribbean. And yeah, it's crazy. It's great.
Yeah, and it's authentic travel experiences as well, living in someone's home. And you mentioned Airbnb. Again, I'm a huge proponent of that, just because you do get maybe a more authentic look at places rather than staying at a hotel every night and stuff like that. So one of my favorite questions to ask guests on the show is about their travel mistakes and mishaps, because everyone thinks, all right, seasoned travelers, Natalie's been traveling, you know, nonstop for 4 years. She's obviously has it all together. Usually the reality is much different than that, in the fact that we make a lot of mistakes because we are traveling so much. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind, a hilarious mishap you've had while traveling that you think, like, this is what travel's all about? Maybe afterwards you think that why it's happening, it might not be so funny.
I do laugh a lot at myself, and you're totally right. We get really complacent and lackadaisical, I think. So a great example was last year I was heading to Vietnam. I'd been all over the place, and I'd already been in Southeast Asia, but I was coming from the US to Vietnam, and I pitched up at the airport. I was there early for once and got in the wrong line for the wrong airline. I don't know how that happened. There were very similar names like China Air and China Airlines. Then I got to the right one, and it was about, 10:30 at night. The flight was pretty late. And I pitched up to the desk, and she's like, okay, great, you're booked on this. And she's like, and have you got your Vietnam visa? And the minute she said it, I was like, oh, God, I just knew. I was like, no. And I just said to her really calmly, I was like, no, I don't. And she's like, I can't let you on the flight. And I was like, yep, I know. I was like the most calm person, because I just realized it was a complete oversight. Like almost every other country in Southeast Asia, you can just rock up and get a visa there. And some of them are free, but Vietnam, of course, different. And I just got way too complacent. And it was like $14 online. I could have done it the day before. And I ended up having to buy a new flight and all this fun stuff. So it was something that I was just resigned to the fact of, because you've made those mistakes before. And it was just amusing.
It's always funny. Well, it worked out for you then, aside from having to buy the extra plane ticket, I guess.
Yeah, it did. And, I had to call on the friend who just dropped me off at the airport to say, hey, I'm actually here for a few more days and I need a place to stay. Or I couldn't book into any hotel at LA. Everything in LA was booked up for some red carpet event. It was ridiculous. It was just one of those moments. Another great, and this was just fun, I just booked on a flight. Somebody mentioned I should go to some jungle bungalow place in Borneo. And I didn't even realize when I just booked the flight to this place that it was on another island, that I might need my passport. And I was looking at the magazine while on the flight going, where am I actually going? And I looked, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to Borneo Island. This is so exciting. But I just started laughing at myself on the plane. I'm sure people was nuts, because I didn't even know where I was going. I got so relaxed about things. And probably one of my least fine moments, but it was still amusing to me, was when I told the Sydney security guard at the airport that he didn't need to search my bag for explosives because they were strapped on me. And I just thought it was hilarious. But most of my friends that I tell were like, how did you not get arrested for that? And I was like, yeah, on reflection, not so smart. So I do stupid things like that. Just keep it spiced up.
Almost the exact same similar situation was I got stuck in Singapore because I didn't have an extra passport page in my book for my Indonesian visa, and they wouldn't let me on the plane. So just like you, I had to call up a friend that had just dropped us off and say, hey, we're coming back for a night. We got to figure this out. And, that kind of stuff's going to happen. And I think it makes for good stories. And that is one of the reasons we travel, is because you don't know what the next day is going to hold. It might seem bad at the time, but in reality, it's like, all right, this is making life exciting and adventurous. And that's kind of what most people are after if they are someone who likes to travel a lot.
Exactly. It's all about the experiences.
Yep. So what do you have in the pipeline then that people should be looking out for? Because we mentioned you have all these income streams. You're always going to different projects and things like that. Either personally or professionally, what do you have coming up?
Professionally, yeah, I'm really excited. We spoke about this a little bit before, but I'm pretty set on my sales funnel and my business. I mean, I've written a book about how to build a sales funnel. And I always knew there was just this missing gap in my portfolio of things that I could offer people. I have three really distinct types of visitors to my site and in my community. There's the people just starting out or with a side hustle, wanting to figure out how to start their business. There's people who have a business but want to take it more location independent. And then there's people who don't want to travel anywhere, but they want more freedom in their life. So they need better systems and a team, etc. And so I didn't really have anything to kind of plug the people at the beginning who just didn't want a book or a guide. So I'm really excited. I have a pilot program coming out called the Freedom Plan. It's a culmination of everything that I've learned over the last 4 years, my best-selling book, my workshops that I've been running, and my 30-day blog challenge. And so I'm just super, super excited to bring it to the world, because I think there's not any other definitive program out there that focuses on lifestyle and business. There's all these travel ones, which are great. There's all these business ones. But I think there's very few people who talk about, okay, what are you trying to achieve here, which is freedom? And how do you go about doing that based on your current situation and who you are? So I'm really excited. That's coming out in July, and then a bigger launch later in the year.
Very cool. And if people are interested in the Freedom Plan, we will have that linked up in the show notes. You can find all the information from that link about, you know, the pre-launch or the soft launch in July. And then, of course, as it goes on into the much bigger launch. Natalie, then what's your travel schedule look like? You said you'll be in Southeast Asia. I'm going to be there. I guess we're heading over October 31st. Will you be there around that time? And we're probably going to do a month or two. So like you, we're trying to settle down a little bit here.
Oh, we should totally, like, see, this is where things come together. It's when you speak to people and you're like, let's get an apartment together on a beach. And as I said, all over the US from the end of this month, I actually go to Portugal next week to play Ultimate Frisbee on the beach and completely disconnect. Then I'm heading up the US and going to World Domination Summit. I'm going to Vancouver to support my friend in the Ironman. I'm going to Dallas, Texas to speak at the podcast movement, I'm going to watch some US tennis open. And then, yeah, heading over to Thailand Way for a conference there, but also just wanting to literally rent an apartment, knuckle down on this launch and have a great time. And then finally to New Zealand at the end of the year for my retreat. And I think I've thrown in Sydney in there because I haven't been for about 10 years and I'm running a workshop and speaking there as well.
Very cool. Tough life, right? Well, Natalie, thanks so much for coming on the show again. Thanks for putting together an absolutely amazing resource over at your site. If people have not checked it out before, The Suitcase Entrepreneur, it will really teach you everything that you need to know about being an entrepreneur. And like Natalie said, the freedom and this digital nomad combined with business. Before I let you go, just remind people how they can come connect with you.
Yeah, well, that's a great start, especially since my website is now back. That's another story. So, but you can also find me on Twitter at Natalie Sisson. I'd love to say hi. Same on Instagram. Love people tagging me there and putting up photos. And also on Facebook, I'm Natalie Sisson, and facebook.com/suitcase entrepreneur. So any of those, I'm a bit of a social media whore. Come and say hi.
Awesome, Natalie. Thanks again for coming on. Look forward to meeting up with you in Portland for World Domination and hopefully then over in Southeast Asia as well.
Yeah, it's a plan.
Thanks again. Guys, if you've got to the end of this podcast and you want to dig deeper into the things that Natalie just shared, head on over to her website, suitcaseentrepreneur.com, which is an incredible resource. Also, as we mentioned at the end of the show, Natalie has just put together a brand new project called The Freedom Plan, which she's only sharing with a select group of people during the pre-launch phase, which is right now. If you want more information about it, I've linked it in the show notes, or you can also go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/freedomplan. Lastly, if you're listening to a travel podcast, that probably means that you want to travel more, and I want to help you do that. And the easiest way for me to help you travel more while spending less is for you to go over and sign up for the Extra Pack of Peanuts email newsletter. And you can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. By signing up for the newsletter, you'll be getting email updates anytime we put up a new podcast, as well as anytime we put up a new post to the site. You're also going to get our free copy of Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire, which is going to set you on the path of how to start acquiring frequent flyer miles and really start traveling around the world for next to nothing. So extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You can sign up for our email newsletter. You can stay abreast of everything that's happening on Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I can help you start to travel more while spending less. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. I'll see you next week, and until then, happy, free travel.